We thought we'd wrap this session up. I'll wrap up 2 Peter with the last 15 minutes, but we wanted to take the first part and go, does anybody have any questions they want to ask about anything? And these are usually hard to start and hard to stop. So before we get to the written ones, if you've got a question and you're going, man, I want to make sure this gets answered, we only have one rule. I've been in settings occasionally where somebody took 3 minutes to ask a question, okay? This ought to be like a 15-second deal, okay? And so anybody got any questions? That was easy. Okay. This one? Paul, why do you throw everything?
That's just some of the deep questions we got.
Because it is much faster. You hand it down the aisle, it takes you 5 minutes. You throw it, it takes 30 seconds.
All right. Please give ideas for serving if you have young kids and busy schedules.
I would check first to see if there's a place that your church has need for you to plug in. When we were on staff at a large church in New England, we did what we called the Wednesday night gathering. Whole family came together. We had convinced every single department in the church to have their event on Wednesday night so that the church wasn't destroying the family every night of the week by having something that somebody could be gone for. We started it with an all-family dinner, and then we asked families to sign up and be on the serving team. And we had serving families that had kids that were 3 years old, but they could help set the table under the guidance of somebody else. And we thought, wait, even when they're young, it may take a little bit longer to accomplish what you need to accomplish, but it will sow the seeds of the delights of serving.
Part of the question is a problem. We're so busy. So if you want your children to learn service, you got to get less busy. That way you can take meals to people who are needy. If you're busy, you won't do that. If it's not part of your lifestyle, it won't become part of theirs. So if you make it a task, like we're going to serve, they won't pick it up. If they just see that's who you are, they will.
I just remember a really quick thing we did when our kids were very young. And we made a habit of going to McDonald's quite frequently in our family. And we had a lot of Happy Meal toys. And in the garage, they were all over the place. And we knew Ray was heading down to Mexicali. And our kids were very young, and we were all going together as a family, although even if you didn't all go together as a family, you could use photography. But so we boxed up all the Happy Meal toys that were just laying around in the garage, never being played with, and we took them down with us to Mexico. And I can tell you the look on my kids' face when all those little toys went out to the Mexican children as rewards for them. They were shocked that these toys that they had discarded long ago were being just gratefully received by these kids. That was a really awesome thing.
That's good. Okay, next question. We have a 13-year-old who was brought up in the church. She now has no interest in anything spiritual. She won't even give the youth group a try. How do we get her interested again? How many of you have kids that you resonate with that question? Because I'm sure that's not just one person. How many of you think you might face this question someday? How many of you have kids younger than 13? Good. All of your hands should have gone up a minute ago. It's hard to imagine that the 10-year-old that like hangs on every word of yours, you have interesting days possibly coming. Okay? So what would you say?
You're the expert.
There was a season where at least one of your kids was there, right? What'd you do?
That's good. When we went on staff at this church, we went from Catalina that on a big Sunday there were 70 people in church to a church that had 2,500 people in attendance and 150 of them showed up at junior high. And our oldest child at that time was fairly introverted and not at all interested in going into that big group. So we prayed and we talked with some mentors and basically found out that, especially as an introvert, if she would need to have some kind of a task and or a person. That's all she would really need in order to go into that and feel like she could break through the wall of her own resistance. So We talked to the youth leader. We said, what kind of a job could she have? And he put her on something. It was, I think, putting out the snacks. So she didn't have to interact with anybody. She just did it. And that made a huge difference. We also prayed this one person in that group she would really connect with. And her and another girl connected pretty early on. And that was it. As long as she knew Lauren was going to be there and she had that job, it really made a difference for her. The other thing I want to say to that is I've heard our children so often be asked the question, why did you like to be involved in church? Why have you kept doing this? And I really love their answer. They said, part of what kept drawing us to Christ was that we saw him changing our parents. And the reason I really want you to hear that is for two reasons. One is that it reminds you that we're in the process of sanctification, of being changed. We will always be in that process if we're moving towards the heart of God. And our kids know it. They know that we need to be reshaped by him. And they said, when we saw that Jesus was so real in our parents' life that he was actually changing them, helping them to be better parents, it gave us confidence that he could change us. And that was just kind of huge. I think the reality, the authenticity, the aliveness, the vitality in our lives was something that was really kind of compelling.
I think get to know your child. Carrie, our oldest daughter, she has her love language, if you know that, is words of encouragement. I was raised in a home that sort of everything was right, so my words were of rebuke to her all the time, correction. And we didn't know why she didn't want to hang around. I was always telling her hair didn't look good, she was wearing something too short, why don't you clean your room? I was making her a better person and driving her away. And it made such a difference when we just became students of her and really started connecting with her on that. I think a lot of times, again, it takes time. If your kid's not liking church, as we said last night, look for a new church. Look for something that connects them some way. And then hopefully they're picking that up from you, that you love doing this. Last thing I'd say, and I don't even know if you agree with this, but that doesn't matter because I'm the director. But in our home, church was non-negotiable. I have a friend who he told his dad, he said, Dad, I think church is boring. I'm not going to go. And his dad says, well, son, where are you going to live then? Because we go to church. Now, our kids didn't always like the church we were in. We said, you don't have to go to our church necessarily.
That's right.
But you do have to be somewhere where you're getting fed once a week. And Virginia would, at one point, go to another church with our youngest daughter when she was a senior in high school. And it was so cute. Let me say this real quick. Julie, we said, you don't need to go. And she said, no, Dad, I'll go to church with you. And then if Mom would go with the other church, that would be great. She says, you're the director of families. It doesn't look good if I don't go to church with you.
I was just going to say, from the years that we've done youth ministry also, if you are in a church that has youth ministry that's happening, but somehow your kid's just not connecting, don't be afraid to call the youth pastor or a staff person and tell them, don't tell my kid, you know, that I called, but could you just kind of look out for my kid? I mean, we see that even happen here where parents will come to a staff and say, hey, you know, my kid's not really fitting in. Can you kind of just make a little extra effort? And you'd be surprised what just because not all staff people and not all youth pastors can spot out that kid that's not connecting. And if you're going, no, we really are in a good church right now. They have a youth ministry, but my kid's just not connecting. Make the call, you know, and just tell the youth pastor, don't tell my kid I called, but could you just make that extra effort? Because I think at that age group, it's all about relationship. And if your kid has a relationship, even just one, that motivates them to come, they'll come.
I'd say this. There's three stages to kids growing up, okay? The first stage is regulation, okay? Which is like you can pretty much go 7, 7, 7, okay? Six or seven years are regulation. That's where you regulate their behavior. Would you agree? Okay? It's like you're not going, hey, you're 5, fix your dinner. Okay? So it's the age of regulation. Okay? They need one kind of parenting during that. The second stage is like 6 to about 12 or so, 13, whatever. Okay? And that's the age of imitation. Okay? And That's where they imitate mom and dad. Pretty much they do what you do. When they're let's admit it, every 10-year-old thinks dad's cool. Okay? Does every 13-year-old think dad's cool? No, because they've gone through puberty, okay? And now dad's an idiot, okay? But dad was cool at 10, but at 13, that is not the case. Would you agree, by the way? Okay, there's a few exceptions, but by and large, it's common, okay? And so that's the age of imitation. They tend to imitate you. Are most teenagers imitating their parents? No, that's because the third stage is like 13 and north. I'd call that the age of inspiration, where they go and do what they're inspired to do. Most of that inspiration is not going to come from dear old dad or dear old mom. Would you agree? Well, they're not agreeing with that. You will. So what I would say is this. When they hit 13, you're going to want to pay much more attention to their environment than you do when they're 5. It always blows my mind. All these parents that are going, oh, my kid's going into first grade. I better make sure I homeschool them because some teacher might wreck. You cannot wreck a first grader, okay? Our kids were in public. And then what happens is they homeschool and protect them and all this kind of stuff. By the way, Earl Palmer said it best. Too many parents try to prepare the road for the child instead of the child for the road, okay? And I know some of you homeschoolers are really mad at me right now, and you're going, I liked them till now. But what I see is then those homeschoolers go, hey, they're in high school now. Let them go to a public school because I've got, in other words, that's when they're starting to imitate people, okay? No first graders imitating their teacher, okay? And now occasionally they do stuff in public school that's stupid. Like when Mark, I think, was in second grade, they want to show that movie. They were like, we're going to show the first graders a sex education movie. Who thinks first graders need this, okay? So what I did was I took Mark out of school and took him to a real movie. We got popcorn. We snuck food in. How many of you sneak food into movies? Good. That is God's will because it's good stewardship, okay?
We still buy the popcorn.
We have snuck pizzas and full meals in and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I love you, Virginia, but you're wrong on that. Well, how many, can I get an amen on this from anybody in here? Okay.
We still buy the popcorn. And.
We still buy one tub of popcorn, so we spend the $65.
It's dessert.
Yep. So I took Mark to a real movie. We got popcorn, all that kind of stuff. He got back to school the next day, and his buddies were all, yeah, it's a stupid movie. Mark was like, well, we saw. Probably was the Terminator. What I'm really saying is this. When your kids hit to be 13, 14, 15 and stuff, pay really careful attention to the environments they're in, okay? And if your kids are younger than that, great time. Which is this, if your church is boring and you're singing hymns and you have a lot of liturgy, if your teenager's into that, great. But I do not know, and I have not, now I like hymns, but how many of you like hymns? Okay, I like hymns, okay? We haven't sung one in my church in 15 years, okay? I have not met a teenager that came up and said, how great thou art changed my life, and I art now a follower of Christ. In other words, and I'll give you an example of this. I was telling our small group this.
You really should have stopped after the popcorn. Let's go on to the next thing.
This is straight talk from a youth pastor. We have a church. I'll give you an example. Oh, the director's showing up. They're going to pull the plug.
They're actually discussing right now if you're coming back next year.
No kidding. I'll give you an example. Last, we got back from Easter, Well, we took 565 teenagers to Mexico, got everybody back from Mexico. They all went home, they showered, and they all came to our Saturday night 8 o'clock Easter service. And we've got a worship band up there. Lincoln Brewster's leading this thing. And I mean, he is going for it. The roof's flying off. I mean, there are guitars. It is loud. I walk out to preach. I preach. We give an invitation. A whole bunch of people receive Christ. And then I'm at the end, and I went, are you all done singing yet? And they went, no. And I said, you want to sing one more song? The whole place goes, yeah. Lincoln, and were you playing? Or were you just Lincoln and his band comes back out and starts playing another song. And I mean, hundreds of teenagers rush the stage in church. And Lincoln finishes, and Mark, remember what they were yelling? One more song. So he leads another worship song. And I mean, these kids are worshiping and holding their hands up. And so he's done. And now 2,000 people start yelling, one more song. So they sing another song. And then they start, I finally had to go out and break it up. Okay? But I'm standing in the wings of the stage looking at this. And I'm looking at hundreds of teenagers yelling at the top of their voice, one more song. And I thought to myself, where else would I rather have my kids be? It's Saturday night. It's 10 o'clock. They're in church yelling one more song. And now, do you think I got letters from angry older Christians the following week? Absolutely. Okay. There are plenty of churches they can go to, and I actually would like some of the worship in some of those churches, to be honest with you. Okay. However, during my kids' teenage years, I want the roof flying off of our buildings. Does that make sense? Okay, and it's a cool thing. There are churches now like that. So you may have to I loved what you guys said last night. You may have to tolerate a church. Find one your teenagers like. Tell your teenagers, we're going to help. You know, people support what they help create. Tell your teenagers, we're going to let you help us pick the church. Okay, and go visit some. Does that make sense? It's because their environment pays a huge role. Okay, here's the next question. I'm hoping this came from a college student. The workers here are so hot. Why can't I date them? Paul?
The reason you can't date them, and you're certainly welcome to after the season's over, we have a definite no fraternization policy. We tell our staff that they cannot fraternize with each other, as I mentioned last night, or with campers. So if we see one of them hanging out with a camper who's hot, we will go up and say, you need to break that off. Cool it down. If they say, oh, but this girl just wants me to share the gospel with them. We say we have really good gals who can do that. And if her interest wanes, there it is. And if you cannot control yourself, we know how to get you into Avalon.
There you go. Okay, next. How do you spend quality time as a couple when your children are very young without spending a lot of money on babysitting? We have 4 kids and older parents that aren't willing to help out much. Oh, my God.
Well, the first problem is our standard is too high for child care. If they will not harm your child, leave them with them. If they will not harm them, leave them. I'm serious. We think they've got to, you know, feed them natural food, and they can't let them watch anything on TV. And we just have this list. No wonder you can't find anybody. The other thing is swap with other parents. Just find somebody else. Say, hey, we'll take your kids for a weekend. You take ours. That sort of thing. You can do that. You don't have to go to expensive places to get away, but you do need to get away. Your kids will not be ruined by eating Twinkies all weekend. But your marriage will be ruined if you don't get away together.
And that just sounded so unsympathetic to those of you who are in that situation.
Sorry, babe.
I liked it. Mark, was Paul right? Absolutely. Thumbs up.
I'm not disagreeing with what he said. All I want to add to that is we get that it's hard. We understand it. We know people that are paying more to go get their babysitter than they are on the date. So yeah, we really do understand that. We're just going to really challenge you this, though. Many of you with young kids can't remember when your last date was. And we are going to challenge you to set a date sometime in the next month and be creative in how you're going to make that happen. That's exactly what we did. Paul's sister lived on the island. She had three kids. We had three kids. We went every other week swapping with them.
No.
Not mates.
Sign up next year, we will have a new director.
I was just going to say, when we lived in Chicago and our kids were all really small, we actually found this little group of 12-year-old girls who had a little babysitting co-op, and because we had four kids, of course, this was, 22 or 18 years ago or whatever, but they would come as a twosome, which we needed to at that time because we had like age 4, 2, and 3 or 4 months. And so, And they would come as a twosome, and they didn't charge much because they were younger. But, we'd only be gone for a couple hours, and if I came home and the sink was filled with dishes, but my kids were happy, I was fine, I mean, I think sometimes now we expect so much of the babysitters. I kind of agree with you, Paul, in that if my kids are safe when I come home and they're happy, I don't care if the house is a mess. We got time alone, and we got to get away. So,
yeah, you can get pretty good babysitting just for the price of a roll of duct tape. the other thing, how many of you have several young kids, like several kids under, say, 7? Anybody here? Okay. We did a pretty cool thing, and it really didn't cost us much. The first several years we had kids, we had a couple different college girls live with us, okay? And they got to live with us free, and then a lot of times in the afternoon, Carol could go out and do whatever she wanted to do, okay? They were thrilled to have free room and board, and then they helped Carol do dinner. We were thrilled to have other people also build into the lives of our kids. It was really a neat thing. And so it was basically a sum-zero deal, okay? And then we got to actually go out and keep dating. The other thing I'd say is this. During those years, try to get enough sort of either alone time or God time or whatever recharges your batteries so you still think fun stuff up, okay? Like our kids, Carol's really good at, stuff like the Easter egg hunts we did, okay? That happened, I never had anything to do with that really. Carol would kind of come up with that and put all of that stuff together. Our kids got to be teenagers, and so we had an Easter egg hunt this year for our kids, and they are 18 and above, and I could not get away without having one. Is that right? And the reason is now we stash cash in the eggs. Okay? They're like, it's a different ball. Not much, but I think things like that are, create some traditions like that. It's a big deal. We'll wrap it up with this one. Paul, Virginia, Ray, and Carol, y'all said you, quote, cleared the deck in their schedules during their kids' teen years so they could be more involved in their kids' lives. For those of us with financial challenges, what are 2 to 3 key ways we can be more involved in our teens' lives without breaking the bank? Great question.
Well, if clearing the deck means we just changed our lives, I think certainly there are, if we're both working, if we need to do that, that's going to be a challenge. But even there, I would say you talk to your boss and say, I have a high value of being at my child's event. Can I come in and work? There are nights, the blessing and curse of a church is there's flexible schedule. And I would come in, but I would come back and work till midnight. It wasn't like I just took the day off to be at their event. And talk to your boss about that. Say, this is a high value. How can I work this in? For us. And then again, it's just continuing to say, this is so important. I'm going to get rid of all the extra things. I don't have to teach Sunday school. I don't have to be in choir. I don't have to be in all these 18 women's Bible studies a week. I can pare this thing down because these are years that I need to be focused on my kids. And we get rid of the things that are not critical to our family if that's where we need to be.
Yeah, I would say be really prayerful and be creative again. And I would actually probably crunch the numbers a little bit and then say, okay, wait, if our greatest value is this, that I don't want to be 8 years from now saying, oh my goodness, where did they go? How did those years pass so quickly? We missed out on so much. Rather than say that, we say mortgage the farm now. You'll have plenty of time to pay off your debt later. And I'm not encouraging you to live in debt, but I am saying that once our children left home, we could do anything in the world we wanted with our time. You know what I'm saying? And then we could work off, you know, debt that we had accrued doing things we thought were important at that time, taking advantage of the season that was before us. There are just all too many parents whose children are grown up who don't have a whole lot of relationship with their adult kids. And I'll just tell you, as they look back, a lot of them would like to rewind the clock to invest in relational equity during the years that you've got them. You can work down other equity at other points in time, but don't miss this chance. So some of us need to rework the numbers and say, okay, we thought we both had to work, but you know what? One of us can cut back to part-time. Or one of us, actually, when you do all the facts and figures, or maybe we don't need to live here. Maybe we really do need to consider moving to Kansas so we can be together. Some have made very gutsy decisions like that. We have a family in New England who sold their $1.2 million house. He was self-employed, and he could manage, if he worked, 80 hours a week. Their four kids were growing up, and he said, hold the presses. I don't want to miss raising my kids. They sold their house. They bought the exact house in Charlotte, North Carolina, for less than half the price. He now works half the time that he was working, and they've just got great family things going.
I would agree. There are things worth going into debt for and things not going into debt for. Does that make sense? Okay. And we live in a new normal, and there are a lot of folks that are out of work. I'm a pastor. Carol has basically not worked to raise our kids. But a few years ago, I went, man, our kids are going to be 13, stuff like that. And I thought, is there anything I can come up with that will like want, they'll want to hang out with dad because we're doing it? And you know, we went out and bought a wakeboard boat. And I got flack from my, if you're a pastor, you get flack for everything. I got flack from our church was not thrilled, some of the people with me buying a wakeboard boat. You know, what's he doing, robbing the offering, stuff like that? But I didn't care. Because I thought, I want a confined space that my teenagers want to hang out with me in. And we have, and I thought, at this point, who cares what people, some of these folks in the church think? And so we had an absolute ball and had a great time in that thing for the last 7 or 8 years. Have a zillion hours on it, but I'll have a lifetime of memory because we did that. And so there are some things worth going, I mean, I think we're probably still paying that thing off. But there are some things worth going into debt for. By the way, the other, first of all, I'll wrap this up. Can we say thank you to y'all? Way to go. That was very cool. Great insight from Paul on the couple thing. Before I wrap up 2 Peter, I want to show you a video. This is exactly what we've been talking about, and you'll pick up the atmosphere from this. This is a thing we do called Thrive. For the last several years, I've wanted my kids out of school at this. One of my theories is never let school screw up their education, okay? And so we have pulled our kids out because I wanted them to be in environments like this. So let's see if it works.
The 7.0 quake was centered 10 miles from Port-au-Prince.
The state of California is facing a mass exodus.
Another anxiety attack on Wall Street. The Dow tumbled.
We are going through the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
Today is the day.
London. We last year, I'll give you an example of the stuff that happens there. Last year, we put up two luxury boxes, and we upgrade people that are heroic people serving and volunteering in their church in these luxury boxes. Last year, we had a couple. They were in the Midwest. They had lost their job. He was a worship pastor, and because he lost his job, he lost his house. Well, they had four kids, and they had to move back in with his parents up in Minnesota. And somebody had paid for them to come out to Thrive, just the two of them, their first trip away from their kids in forever, and first sort of date type thing forever. Now, they couldn't afford to come, so somebody paid their way to come. And we had a family in our church that they knew that put them up for free, so they're living with a family. And we heard this story, and we thought, let's make their night. So we got them right at the end of the first session. We brought them up on stage, we told their story, and then we gave them every book by every speaker at the entire conference. I mean, scores of books, okay? We gave them all of Lincoln's CDs autographed and signed, gave them all that stuff. And then we said, oh, by the way, here's a stack of gift certificates to almost every restaurant, Cheesecake Factory, $50, all of this stuff. And then we said, oh, and here is a set of car keys. We have rented a Mustang convertible for you for the whole week, okay? We have also arranged for a cabin from a friend of ours in Tahoe, and after this conference, you can go up to Tahoe, take your Mustang convertible up there, and stay for free up at Lake Tahoe. And then we said, oh, and here, we have new keys for you, and here are keys. We have rented the honeymoon suite at the local Hyatt Hotel, okay? Because we know you haven't been alone in a long time, and we've stocked that with food. We've already moved all of your luggage from there over to the Hyatt, so you don't have to go back up. And then we said, and outside is this. And the lights came on our screens, and the video projector outside shot in a shot. We had a white 18-foot stretch limousine outside with a guy in the tuxedo and the back door open, and we said, this limousine is gonna take you and all of your friends out for a night on the town, then it's gonna drop you off at the hotel. Your Mustang is already at the hotel, you got keys for it, and we just want you guys to, but we just believe God has better days ahead for you. And I mean, she is just, tears are streaming down her face. And it was so cool, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. And you know the cool thing about that? My kids got to see that. You know, my kids got to see, like, and it's funny, the first time my kids were at Thrive, they were like, I didn't know adults acted like this in church. It's unbelievable. Well, they've seen Paul here, but the other stuff. And so, by the way, I'll send these around. If you're interested in coming and registering, take one. This will actually sell out about 3 months in advance, so you have time. So if you want one of these, only take it if you're thinking you might come, okay? Because you can register on the back. Now, if you've got your notes out, y'all have your notes? About half of you, okay? Yesterday we were in the book of 2 Peter, which follows the book of 1 Peter, was written by the apostle Peter. Paul's a smart group. And Peter wrote this book. His big idea was this: dear friends, this is now my second letter to you. I have written both of them as reminders to stimulate you to wholesome thinking. And we said this: Peter's concern was your faith would be challenged and deepened. Second, your faith would be solid and protected. And third, your faith would be confident and inspired. And so we walk through chapter 1 where he answers the question, because I want your faith to be challenged and deepened, how can I grow my faith? And we gave three things that would weaken you and three things that would strengthen you, okay? Chapter 2 is how can I guard my faith? And that's a whole section, and you can read it later. I filled it out for you. How do you cult-proof your faith, okay? And that whole section, that's 2 Peter chapter 3. I want to wrap this week up by asking this question. Chapter 3, how can I give my faith away? How can I give my faith? In other words, during times of trial and hardship, which America is in right now, how can I live with confidence and how can I live with inspiration? In other words, how do I respond to tough times with a class? Let me give you an example of a guy. I know a guy who asked a pilot, just in conversation, the pilot said, oh, let me tell you my favorite flying story. He said, I was the pilot when this happened. The flight was going from, I think it was New York to Miami, okay? And there was a guy sitting in first class that may have been the most selfish guy ever to step on a plane. Get this. He was not happy with where his seat was, even though he was in first class. They switched him to another seat. He wasn't happy with that seat, but he stayed there. Get this. He sent his meal back on an airline. Okay? And they gave him a second one. He sent that back, too, on an airplane. And to indicate his displeasure, the second time he sent the meal back, he slammed back in his seat. He was so mad. Well, that caused the tray table on the back of that seat to throw all of that food all over an elderly couple sitting behind him. And this flight attendant rushed down and said to this elderly couple, and everybody in first class is now looking at this jerk and going, this guy is really a jerk. And the and he's just thinking, they throw him off the flight. We know we're in the air, but put him off anyway. And so this flight attendant rushes back to the older couple and says, are you okay? Is there anything? And this guy says, he explains their story. He says, we are traveling to Florida. We've never been on a plane before. This is our first ever plane ride. And the reason we're doing this, he says, quote, we've been saving up for 50 years. We are celebrating our 50th wedding anniversary, and so we decided to buy first-class plane tickets for our 50th wedding anniversary for our first-ever flight. And this flight attendant gets choked up. She goes, I'm sorry, is there anything I can do for you? And he goes, well, just I would love a bottle of champagne. That would make it up for the whole thing. And she says, absolutely. So she goes up and she gets him a bottle of champagne, and he uncorks the bottle of champagne, and with all of first class watching, pours the entire bottle over the head of the guy in front of him. Right? Is that great or what? Sometimes you have to respond to tough times in great ways. Now, Peter is writing to people being persecuted saying, now, how do you live with confidence and inspiration during times of trial and hardship? And he gives three things, and I just want to warn you, this is a very deep book, these are very deep points, but none of these are going to sound very spiritual, okay? Sometimes the Bible's way more practical than spiritual, and this is a case in point. Number one, he says this, keep your cool. Keep your cool. Would you agree Christians are famous for losing their cool? I mean, every time somebody gets elected, Christians think they're the Antichrist and the end has come. Okay? I'm serious. I know Christians. Oh, my gosh, Obama got elected. I think he's the Antichrist. Okay? And then there are Christians in Berkeley who thought Bush was the Antichrist. Okay? I mean, you just look at this stuff. Or how many of you remember Y2K? Anybody remember Y2K? Okay. It is, oh, the end is near. Christian leaders wrote books. This is it, man. This is the last time. Christ is coming. You know, because God, and it was almost like God's not up in heaven going, oh, no, Microsoft screwed up a code. What am I going to do? Okay. I have a friend of mine who's a pastor. Y2K, he quit his job, sold his house, moved to the middle of nowhere in Reading, okay, and moved to the middle of nowhere and waited for the end to come. I know a pastor, he had a beachfront home at Newport Beach, and he sold it for $400,000 because of Y2K, okay? That thing is now worth somewhere between $5 and $7 million. Every time I see this guy, I go, why didn't you sell me the home? Tell me next time you're going to celebrate. Unbelievable. And you just think, Christians are so good at losing their cool. Wouldn't you agree? Yeah. Okay. A matter of fact, and occasionally you meet somebody who isn't. Some of you, if you've been here and heard me before, you hear me tell us, there. Some of you parents, listen carefully. This is awesome. Okay. I flew into Seattle to speak at a conference in Seattle, a marriage and parenting conference, and the couple that picked me up, they were just fun, and I felt that from the minute. I hop in the back seat of their car, they're driving me through Seattle, and as we're driving it through, the wife goes, oh, this is where it happened. And I said, what? And she said, I was driving with my teenage daughter, who's one of those too cool for God life and everything else kids. And she goes, I was driving with my teenage daughter a couple weeks ago down here, and I pulled right up to this light. That's downtown Seattle, a lot of people around. And she said to her daughter, she said, honey, get down. And she took her daughter and pushed her down. And she said, stay down, and sped about two blocks down, then pulled over. Her daughter's thinking, man, is there somebody with a gun? Is there like a carjacker? What's the deal? And finally, her daughter came up and she said, oh, man, Sonny, you can get up now. She said, I am so sorry. And then she said this to her two cool teenage daughter. She said, I am so sorry, honey. So her daughter's like, what's the matter? And she said, I'm sorry. I saw a friend of mine on the side of the road, and I couldn't bear to be seen with my teenage daughter. Is that great or what? Parents, the best. By the way, moms and dads, one of the best things you can do as a parent is keep your cool. By the way, do your kids know how to set you off? Oh, it's a sport. They say to their friends, hey, come on over after school. There's my mom. Watch this. They push a button, she explodes. It's like a game, okay? Now, notice what Peter says. And by the way, these are some of my favorite verses in the entire Bible, if you get what he's really saying. Check it out. He goes, first of all, you must understand in the last days, what's the next word? Scoffers will come. Now, let me give you a definition of a scoffer. By the way, are there scoffers out there? Oh, absolutely. Okay. Matter of fact, we got some, I think, here in this camp. Anytime you get hundreds of people together, you got some people that are scoffers. I'm going to give you a definition of a scoffer. A scoffer is someone who treats lightly what ought to be taken seriously. Most of the time when I meet a scoffer, I go, you know what, dude, you're like living backwards. You're taking serious stuff lightly, and you're all shook up about what you're wearing. Okay. But I love this. He goes, you know what? In the last days, scoffers are going to come. So don't sweat it. Problem is, every time a Christian sees a scoffer, oh, no, that person's an atheist. Whoa. Like God's up there going, oh, somebody doesn't believe in me. Maybe I'm going to disappear. Okay? And then he says this, they'll come scoffing and following their own evil desires, and they'll say, where's the coming he promised? Okay? And then he goes, but don't forget this one thing, dear friends. And I love this. He goes, with the Lord, a day is like a what? A thousand years. He's going, man, just take the long view. Quit stressing out. Scoffers are going to come. God's in control of the next 1,000 years. Don't sweat it. He goes, 1,000 years is like a day. And so he goes, there's a great old joke about this. A guy met God. And the guy said, Lord, is it true 1,000 years are like a day and a day is like 1,000 years? And God said, absolutely. And he says, and is it true a penny is like $1,000,000 and $1,000,000 like a penny? And God said, absolutely. And the guy said, good, Lord, can I borrow a penny? And God said, sure, in a day. I think it's a great thing. If you're taking notes, write down two words, okay? Write down two words. People, write down the words react, and write down the words respond. React and respond. People don't live well if they react instead of respond. People don't love well if they react instead of respond. People don't last well if they react instead of respond. Okay. Now, I also want to say this. If you were to talk to any of the four of my kids and you were just going to say, does mom react or respond? They would all say, oh, she's cool, calm, collected, and keeps her cool. They would say, does dad react or respond? They would say, dad's the guy in our family most likely to lose his cool. Is this true, Mark? Yeah, absolutely. And so this is Paul, do I have like 10 minutes? Good, because here I want to meddle a little bit. I want to stop preaching and meddling for a minute. I want to give you four seasons to keep your cool and to not react. Because I don't know about you, the minute I start reacting, I start making all bad decisions, okay? And to jot these down somewhere, okay? When to keep your cool. Number one, when life is stressful, keep your cool. In other words, I just lost my job. My 401k just turned into a 401k mark. I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to whatever. When life gets stressful, I'm going to give you $1 million line. I'm saying this to every group of leaders I'm with and have for the last years. Here's the deal. The key to the future, the key to the next 3 to 5 years is this. Respond to bad news in great ways. I believe the only people in America that are going to have great lives in the next 5 years are the people who respond to bad news in great ways. Does that make sense? And nobody responds to bad news in great ways if they don't keep their cool. Number one, when keep your cool? Number one, when life is stressful. Number two, keep your cool. I want to plead with you on this one. When your marriage is rocky. When your marriage is rocky, keep your cool. I know a lot of folks that are going, oh, my marriage is rocky. I've fallen out of love. I meet people that I'm more attracted to my spouse. We're not getting along. I think we might get divorced. Oh, when your marriage is rocky, this is a time, instead of getting, I love what Paul, what you said last night. In other words, don't get a divorce. And now, if you're here and you've been divorced, I don't care. What I'm saying is this, be committed to the marriage you're now in. Okay, give your kids and future kids the gift of stability and stay committed to the marriage you're now in. In other words, when marriage is rocky, don't start making all kinds of decisions. I read an interesting statistic the other day. 85% of couples that got divorced regretted it within 6 to 12 months. Okay, and I would just say this, be committed to the marriage you're in. When your marriage gets rocky, keep your cool. You know what the problem is? When anything gets rocky, I don't know about you, I make all kinds of decisions. Let me talk to you college students for a minute. When I was 20, I actually had become a Christian, been a Christian a year, and I walked away from God. I actually took my Bible. I had this Good News for Modern Man. Anybody remember that? Okay. I took that Good News for Modern Man. I actually threw it across the room, and I said to God, we are done. I'm out. That lasted 3 days. Then a friend of mine named John Archer goes, hey, man, what's up? You look down. And we sat down together, and I poured the story out to him, and he said to me words that changed my life. He said one line, and I've never recovered. He said, here's the key. Never make any decisions when you're down. Never make any decisions when you're down. Now, I don't know about you. Here's how I'm wired. The minute I get down, I start making all kinds of decisions. Is anybody else wired like this? You know, I'm going to quit, I'm going to drop out, I'm quitting my church, I'm quitting my marriage, I'm quitting my, you know, whatever. He said, if you make decisions when you're down, they'll almost always be the, and then this guy looked at me and he said, if I made decisions when I'm down, I'd be divorced, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, I wouldn't have my kids, just never make any decisions when you're down. In other words, when your marriage is rocky, that's a bad time to decide whether or not you're staying in a marriage. Does that make sense? Okay? So when your marriage is rocky, keep your cool. When life is, number three is this, when your kids become teenagers, keep your cool. When your kids become teenagers, keep your cool. That's a great time to pray more, think more, strategize more. Paul put it well, study your kids, figure out what turns them on, figure out what turns them off, do more of one, less of the other. And the so actually, I only wanted to give you those three, okay? Life is stressful. Marriage is rocky. Kids become teenagers. Just keep your cool. That's a big deal, okay? Now, the second thing he says in Peter is this. Number one, how do you live with confidence? Keep your cool. Number two, keep looking forward. Keep looking forward. And I'm going to end with that just in a second. I'll come back to that in a second. Number three is this. Keep expecting God's best. Keep expecting God's best. And he says, grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. To him be glory both now and forever. Do we have that video? We'll close with that. This is cool. Let me go back up to keep looking forward, okay? In keeping with this promise, we are looking forward. Circle those two words, looking forward. He says, we are looking forward to a new heaven and a new earth, the home of righteousness. So there, dear friends, since you are, what? Looking forward to this, make every effort to be found spotless, blameless, and at peace with him. And he basically says, here's the key. You want to live with confidence and inspiration? Number one, keep your cool. Don't make decisions when you're down. Second one, he says, keep expecting God's best even when it hasn't arrived yet. Never stop expecting God's best. I have a pastor friend of mine that's 76 years old named Glenn Cole in Sacramento. Glenn Cole rocks. I mean, he's the most alive. Glenn Cole, a year and a half ago, took over a church of 250 people. They are now running 1,000 people, and he's 76 years old. The guy just lights it up. Unbelievable. And Carol and I played golf with Glenn a couple weeks ago. He calls me up, hey, you want to play golf? Sure. He goes, we're playing in a tournament. He goes, I know you're pretty good. He goes, so I want to play golf. He goes, we're going to win, so you're going to have to be good. I'm going, okay, let me give it a shot. So we go and play, and of course, we don't win because of me. But then we get home, and he goes, hey, tomorrow night, I got tickets to the brand new Karate Kid. It's the critic premiere where all the, it hasn't been released yet, but all the critics are there. You want to go see Karate Kid with your wife and our wife? So we go with Glenn. We're driving down there, and he tells me this story. This is awesome. He goes, when I moved to Sacramento, I took over a new church about 25 years ago, and the church was called Bethel Temple. And he goes, I'm on the flight in, and somebody, he goes, where are you going to pastor? And he goes, or what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm going to take over Bethel Temple. And they go, the guy goes, oh, that's that Jewish synagogue in downtown, right? And he goes, we have a perception problem. So now, when they train pastors, they say, when you go into a church, don't change anything for the first year. Win everybody over. People won't vote for any change your first year. He goes, my first year, he goes, I walked in. He goes, first board of me, and I said, we got to change the name of this church. We got to change the location of this church. We got to sell this property and move. He goes, one of the guys on the board said, I have some land that I might be willing to sell the church pretty inexpensively. Let's go. He goes, he had like 80 acres on Highway 50, prime territory. So Glenn goes out. The guy shows Glenn this, and Glenn goes, this is it. So he goes to the guy's office, and Glenn's standing at the office door with the guy. You got to hear Glenn tell this. He's standing at the office door, and he says to this business guy, he goes, you know, you should just give that to the church. The guy's like, what? He said, yeah, all 80 acres. You should just give it to the church. And Glenn said, the guy actually went, no thanks, and closed the office door on it. Okay? So Glenn said, open the, I'm going to be praying. Give it to the church. Close the door. Goes back, starts praying about it. 2 days later, the guy calls and says, God won't let me off the hook. I'm giving the whole 80 acres to the church. Okay? So Glenn goes, we call a congregational meeting 3 months after he's been in this church. And he said, the congregation voted to change the name of the church, to sell the church, and to move the church 15 miles away. And he said there was not one negative vote. It was one. I got people in my church that would vote against the resurrection. Okay, this is unbelievable. Not how many of you are in a church like this? Okay, he said there wasn't one negative vote. And I said, how did you pull that off? He said, because God did a miracle. He said, I got up and said, we need new property. We need a new church. God has already done a miracle. We have 80 acres for free. And Glenn goes, he looks at me and we're driving the car. He goes, nobody ever votes against the miracle. And he goes, that's what's wrong with Christians these days. Nobody's praying for miracles anymore. Is that good? He goes, we need to get back to where our church is praying for some miracles. And churches need to see God do some miracles. And people need to see God do some miracles. He goes, Americans, for some reason, are so self-sufficient, they've stopped thinking God can do miracles. And we need to get back to the days where God shows up and does some miracles. And we need pastors and people who pray for miracles. Is that good or what? Okay? In other words, keep expecting God's best and let us not get so cynical in this next year. We don't think God actually exists and does still work. Okay? If this were a different kind of crowd, somebody would have said amen. Okay, very good. And the last one is this. Keep looking forward. And I want to wrap this up. I didn't plan on doing this, but you know who Luis Palau is? I think he's 75 now. And we were at a conference together. We're at this event together. We sat at a table. We just had a ball talking. Luis is the Latin American version of Billy Graham. He has spoken to more people, I think, on our planet other than Billy Graham. Argentina, recently 300,000 people showed up in the streets of Argentina to hear him speak. Hundreds of or thousands of people met Christ. Guy's an amazing guy and very cool. So we're at this event, and Luis said, my church needs some help. Would you help us? And I said, yes, under one condition. He goes, what's that? And I said, you got to preach at Bayside. He goes, happy to. And so he comes to preach at Bayside, and then he comes backstage, and I'm doing some interviews with him between services backstage. And Leslie and Christy walk in to the interview because they were leaving for something, and I wanted to say goodbye to him. And I thought, this is the perfect chance to ask Luis. So I asked Luis a question, and what he said to my daughters is priceless. Okay? So check this out.
It's so good.
Luis, this is my daughter, Christy.
Yeah, Christy.
My daughter, Leslie. They just turned 18.
I know, okay, girls, I know. You had the party last night.
Yeah, that's right. Luis, they're 18 years old. Yeah. Both of them are Christians, just getting started serving God. Yeah. They just spent their entire summer working at a
camp.
At a Christian camp.
Where?
Catalina Island.
Catalina, oh,
suffering
wow,
for Jesus well. On Catalina Island.
A real pagan field. Yeah.
What What would you say to them if you had these two, if you have every single 18-year-old in the world looking at you and you got to talk to them for 3 minutes, what would you tell them?
3 minutes. Okay, girls, here we go. No, you know, one verse that came into my head when your dad said that was, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the evil days come, when you say, I have no contentment in them. You know, when you're young, it's choice to serve Jesus Christ. And then to start young and go throughout all your life serving the Lord. Second thing I'd quickly say, don't you dare marry a non-believer. All right, I'll come after you myself.
Oh, good. You want to repeat that one again? Yeah. All right. Take five. Listen, girls.
2 Corinthians chapter 6. Do not be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. So many kids today and even parents say, well, but he goes to church once in a while. Or he is a nice kid. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the Lord said, don't marry an unbeliever. Too much pain, girls. Too much pain. Wait till the Lord has a good guy for you. And if he doesn't have one, stay single. It's better to be single than poorly married. That's what I would say.
Yeah,
because that's
hang
what
out
I
with
said.
Dad and Mom. There you go.
He didn't set me up either. You know?
That's right.
Okay, the third thing is stay in the Word and do it now that you're young. When I was 18, the guy who discipled me said, Luis, now that you're single, spend hours in the Bible. When you get married, half your time is chopped off. And every child that comes along, another 10% of your time is chopped off. By the time you have four kids, only 10% of your time is your own. So take advantage now that you're teenage girls, spend a lot of time with the Lord, learn everything you come in the Word, because time gets shrinking as you get older. You just don't have as much time. And what's in your mind and your heart when you're a teenager never leaves you. Never leave. It's glorious to see girls who love Christ like you guys do. At least your dad thinks so. You know?
Yeah. And they got him cool.
Twin boys, but they're not boys. They're 46 years old. They were your age once. And though both of them have served the Lord. They went to Wheaton College. They married good Christian girls. They're serving Jesus Christ. They're middle-aged guys now, but they started young. And you know, if you start in your youth, nobody can take that away from you. You know, sometimes you hear about guys who like to tell their story. You know, I was a wild guy in the world. Yeah, fine, keep your story. I'd rather be holy, you know, be holy and not have a dirty story to tell for the movies. It's much better to have, what's your life? What were you like a teenager? I was a boring follower of Jesus Christ, but I lived a holy life and a pure life and I married the right guy and I don't have a gory story to make a movie out of. Thank God for that. You know, the best story is Jesus came into my heart when I was a kid. I walked with the Lord all these years. I love him. God sent me a guy that was just right for me. Not perfect, but just right. And I'm serving him till I die.
And all God's people said?
Amen.
Amen. Hey, on behalf of Carol and my son Mark, we want to say I never take coming to speak here lightly. And you will know a group of people by the way they live, by the way they love, and by the way they laugh. And you have been a treasure of people to be with. And so we just want to say thanks for listening, and we'll see some of you thrive. God bless you. Thanks.